I'm Ted Baker in the studios of WEOS and WHWS at the Scandling Center at Hobart and William Smith, and this is the Hobart Football Podcast postseason edition for the 2021 season, which wrapped up with a 9-2 record, 21-3 win over Westminster in the bowl game. Kevin DeWall, head coach, with us. Welcome back.
Thank you.
It's interesting. You don't see this all that often. We talk about smash-mouth football, but this was an example. I mean, this game was not won by offense, by defense, by special teams, by X's and O's. It was won by knocking the other guys in the face and taking the ball away.
It was a great mentality, and it's something that we've always strived for here since I've been a part of the program, is making sure that we're going to play great defense, we're going to try to establish the line of scrimmage, and take care of the football. And those aspects, if you can play it in a fast and physical way, regardless of schemes, regardless of weather, regardless of opponents, that typically travels, and that's something we try to hang our hat on. And I think it really came to full fruition in that game. Everything that we've coached for, that was kind of like the culmination of the season. And I thought our defense played really, really aggressive from first whistle to last. I thought our special teams plays were significant in that game, and I think offensively, we went after a really good defense right at the point of attack. And I thought it was all three phases finally marrying it up together, and it was a good quality win on the road.
So let's talk a little bit about special teams. The first time they lined up to punt, they had basically two punters who had punted about the same number of times, but they lined up in a pretty odd-looking formation, went with a fake that didn't work. Then second time you get the block and the touchdown. And we were just talking before we came on, they show a lot of different punt looks, but it just, to me, it kind of screamed out fake in a way. It was almost like they tipped their hand a bit on that first fake.
Yeah, they had shown throughout the year that they had actually faked a bunch during special teams. So we had seen, I mean, we didn't have the entire season of them, but the games we exchanged, we saw some looks. They have their defensive player of the year, number 7, that strong D end, was like they use him as a quarterback, tight end, along with their other D end, number 3. Both those guys were Division I transfers, really athletic, dynamic players. So they use those guys at different spots. So we went in, and we're an aggressive punt block team. Everyone knows that when they faces us. So I think that was a way for them to try to slow us down. And really credit to our guys and our coaches for having a good game plan. We literally practiced 7 or 8 different formations that week going into it, knowing who's eligible, who's not. And really what they're trying to do is catch you off guard to either gain a possession and or slow our block down so that they could gain some yards on the punt. And fortunately, we flipped it on them. We were able to both get the stop when they tried to fake it, and then that punt block for the touchdown was a really significant play early in the game.
Now, which brings up another question, because I had noticed when getting ready for the game that this number 7, the defensive end, had a carry, but they also had an offensive player who was number 7. You can't play on both sides of the ball, so on special teams, how does that work? Is there any sort of reporting? Does he have to tell you so you know which number 7's in there?
It's tricky. And some of these teams, they have much larger rosters. They have two or three guys with multiple numbers. And we have a couple on our team just because of our retired jersey numbers. But our roster is so small that every guy has usually just their one number. There's a couple exceptions to that. But as we face some teams, the NCAA rule is that you can't have the same number on the field twice. Obviously, you can't have two number 7s out there, two number 3s, 4s, whatever number you want to say. But what it is you have to be really organized, because there's no, they don't have to tell you who's who. So in some games, you got to figure out, all right, body type wise, color of their cleats, how do you tell them apart? And
that's what I try to do in the broadcast booth. It's like find some distinguishing feature, especially in special teams.
Absolutely.
I've been saying all season long, you feel bad sometimes because a kid makes a tackle in special teams coverage and you're not sure which kid it is.
Yeah, it is tough. And, I think that's the nature, unfortunately, of special teams being mixed with offense and defensive players. But, yeah, we knew going in that those were two players. And again, on our side of the ball on offense, we knew up front those two guys were their bookend DNs, really good players. But they number 3 was more of their wildcat quarterback, power runner, and number 7 was kind of like the guy that they could block and then throw to in score zone. So he was like a really good tight end for him as well. So it was just a matter of knowing where they were lined up. And same thing, we thought that their punter was a good punter, but if we could get some pressure on him, like most good punters, does he average less on his punts, yards per kick? And then at the same time, could we get one that would change that field position? And then in our case, ultimately led to some points.
On that block for the touchdown, it looked to me like he just didn't get a very good kick away. I mean, you got good pressure, but it looked like the kick just came out almost flat, waist high.
Yeah, it actually hit Blake Hansen in the face, in the face mask. So he blocked it with his helmet in his face. Yeah, it's one of those things sometimes, the operations. If you can rush someone's operation. No different from a quarterback, a place kicker, you know, a golf swinger, a free throw. If you can change someone's normal operations, ultimately, a lot of times you're going to, you know, get some different results. And I think that's what happened there. I think we had rushed his mechanics, and as much as it was the pressure, he kind of kicked it into us as much as we blocked it.
Despite all the good things you did in the first half, it was still a very close game, and it looked like they were going in for a touchdown right before the half. I was all set to say touchdown. That receiver had the ball. He's at like the one-yard line, and there's nobody around. Where the heck did C.J. Calero come from?
What a big play, and just kind of culmination for him. We thought, like we talked before, I think he was deserving of all-conference. He's a heck of a linebacker. Just really, really smart, cerebral, but aggressive, strong. And at that point, we were actually down some other guys on defense. So, like, it was a big stop for not just the whole unit, but for CJ to take that leadership role. And it's that never give up mentality. You know, the guy caught it. They completed the pass. He's going in to score. But CJ was right there, bang, bang, play, and, you know, came through. And we strive for, you know, getting the ball out. And he put his helmet and shoulder pad right on it and knocked it out. And it was a key stop right there, like you talked about it. That was going to come to a one-possession game, and obviously momentum going in a half, and now all of a sudden it switched back in our favor. So big clutch play, and you know, I thought CJ played one of his best games of his career right there.
Westminster had a good deep passing game, and all day long it kept saying, okay, they're throwing underneath, get ready for that long one, and it really never came. And I've said that a few times this year. Were you surprised they didn't take more deep shots, or is that just a testament to how good your coverage is? Because the secondary was great in this game.
Yeah, I thought it was a combination of both. Early on, they had that slot receiver who was their top receiver. He was really an athletic, quick guy, can create some separation pretty easily. So they were trying to get the ball out quickly, and I think that's actually a testament to our rush. Because we come from a lot of different places, and that negative play, those sacks, sometimes force teams to, all right, the ball's got to come out quicker. And if we can combine that pressure with coverage at times, I thought our coverage was really, really strong. You know, Blake Hansen had a really significant day kind of rolling down and coming up with some open field tackles. And then really on the back end, the corners and the safeties, you know, there was a one or two where they tried to get behind us and we showed good coverage that forced them to throw it underneath. So I do think that's the goal of our defense, is if we can still remain aggressive up front and make sure that quarterbacks and O-line are not comfortable with their protections, the ball coming out quicker, and then obviously our athletes in the back end rallying to the ball and not letting it get behind us. It was a really good game plan, and more importantly, executed at a really high level. So the defensive coaches did a really good job, really in a short week of preparation with less video, putting together a really strong game plan, and I think that helps having, you know, a lot of experience on the defense side of the ball. Where now, and we've said this all along, we try to recruit guys who are really smart players, and not just book smart, but really football IQ. Now that you can carry over all those different game plans throughout the year that have kind of all come to fruition here in the last game, and it was really, really neat to see. And like I said, at times I caught myself saying, like, this is awesome. I want to watch our defense keep playing, because they were playing fast. They were playing physical. The basic mindset of how we want to play, but more importantly, they were sound. They were tackling well. They were getting the ball out. The things that when we've been playing really well, that's the, you know, the kind of keys of our defense.
And you were telling me that was kind of a point of emphasis. We talked going into the game about the speed that they have. So you kind of felt like one of the ways you neutralize speed is to play really physical and take some pops at them.
Absolutely. And it's a physical game. You know, a couple of their players weren't able to finish, and I think it was they were all clean plays. It's just we play. You know, there's a lot of ways to play football, and I think that when it comes down to it, you know, there's a reason why Coach Gray and our strength staff have worked hard, our guys work hard in the weight room. We want to play a physical brand of football, and you know, a lot of people call it old school, blue collar. To me, it's a productive way of playing football, and if we can do that, we always want to play fast and physical, and that physical piece is done, you know, through the echo of the whistle and done the right way. But no doubt, I thought we kind of presented a different approach to maybe some of the defenses they faced. You know, some teams play bend but don't break, and some teams, you know, just kind of sit back and read and react. We're always going to be aggressive. And we saw earlier in the year, sometimes you can give up a big play that way. But I think high risk, high reward, we want to make sure that we're going to be an aggressive defense. I think players enjoy playing in that style. and allows the type of young men who we've recruited and developed to go. What we're trying to do is put them in great positions to be successful, and I think that's the fun part of watching our defense play. They play fast, they're excited, and when someone else makes a play, they're there celebrating together. So I thought it was a really exciting finish, and like I said, the part of that second half was just decisions to – I didn't know if they were going to be able to move the ball on our defense. So then we took a little bit off the gas pedal on offense. Not that we weren't attacking, but to show, like, all right, if you look at the time of possession, I think it ended up being like it was about 50-50 in the first quarter, about 7 minutes up to like 9 minutes. And then by the third quarter, we had it for like 13 minutes time of possession. So what we were doing is we were putting an aggressive defense out there that was then healthy and fresh as best as we could. I know we had some bumps and bruises throughout the game, but I just think complementary football, as an offensive coach, I'm always going to try to give our defense a long field to defend and make sure that they're fresh when they're out there. So, and if we can give them a lead, possess the ball, score points, it kind of just marries up to give yourself the best chance to put a win on the scoreboard.
I know that defense plays as a unit and succeeds as a unit, but I want to talk about one guy, and that's Emmett Ford. I mean, what makes him so special? I saw a picture of him earlier this year with a couple of the other D guys, and you look at him and he looks like he should be on the debate team. I mean, he's not a huge guy. He's obviously got speed, we know that, but where does that drive come from that can make a guy that doesn't look like a real physical force into the league's defensive player of the year?
It's amazing to see, and he goes in the upper echelon of guys that I've coached that just have the instinct to be around the football. And I think all good players have it, but especially defensive players have that knack. He's pound for pound strong. He's explosive. He's got the quickness. But what separates him from maybe other guys who might have bigger frames and larger bodies is his warrior mentality and his competitiveness. When it's time to play, he's a different player than he is off the field. And again, some people look at him and they're like, that can't be the same guy who's a first-team All-American, two-time Defensive Player of the Year. And I've talked to some coaches afterwards, and like, man, we're going to be glad to see that 22 is not going to be lined up on it. And he just was one of those guys that he consistently got better. You know, the staples of what you would like to see. He's a hard worker. Obviously, as a captain, he was voted in by his peers as a leader. There's just a lot of things going for him. But I think when it's time to compete, you want him in your foxhole. That's for sure.
So have you had a chance to sit back and reflect a little bit about 18-4? I don't know, there's maybe 300 Division III teams in the country, and there's probably not more than a dozen that can say that over the last 2 years.
Yeah, the ride back was, you know, kind of emotional in the sense of, you know, hugs and goodbyes for some in terms of we're still going to be able to celebrate those seniors and their careers. But in the sport of football, man, we hit the ground running. So even that extra week of playing in the bowl game, other teams were out recruiting. So our staff has tried to divide and conquer. We're out recruiting. You know, you got to recruit every day. That's the life force, to make sure that you're bringing in some quality young men to add and try to replace for some of these guys that are going to be graduating. But yeah, we've had a couple moments to really reflect on it, and I'll probably have more once we kind of get off the road around the holidays here coming up. But yeah, 18-4 over 2 years, and you know, obviously the competitor in me wants to be, you know, 22-0 in those games and be able to play on. I think you know, you see what RPI is doing right now in the playoffs. I knew we had a strong conference, and I think it showed from, you know, our non-conference games in the beginning of the year, the crossovers all the way through to the end. And I just think that really pleased with the effort and just the buy-in for our players. And I think that's what's exciting about the culture. And we talked about it before, about where we're going. I think we're happy and you know, glad that we've been able to finish the last two seasons really strong. But there's also a little bit of that hunger in there that says, you know, we were close and what could have, should have been. And I think if you look at the tradition that we've had here and the bar has been set really high, that Liberty League championships, NCAA playoff wins, going to fight for a national title is the realistic goals that we want to have here. So as much as we feel good about it, we're also going to reflect and figure out, all right, we're back to work already, figuring out how do we take those next steps. You know, you mentioned some players that you can't just replace certain guys. So it's more than just, hey, you're going to insert a guy there. But I believe our culture is pulling the rope in the right direction. You know, from the strength and conditioning to the development. I think we have some really good young players on our team that maybe their role is going to have to take a significant jump, you know, this winter and spring, and that's exciting. And I think every year, that's why we talked about Team 127. This was the 127th year of playing football. There will never be another Team 127. you can't, all the variables of injuries and the senior leadership and all the different qualities that go into making this team special. Well, now we're back to work, ready, and I'm going to meet with the team this evening talking about, guess what, we're already moving forward on what Team 128 is going to be. So without rushing through it and, you know, saying, all right, that wasn't a good season. No, it was a great season, but now we can't rest on our laurels. We got to really now focus on how do we continue to get better, and that's always been a staple of our program is now how do we, right now, as we have recruits visiting campus, as we have guys finishing finals, as we have guys, you know, recovering from injuries or surgeries or preparing for their winter strength conditioning, everyone individually, how do they get better themselves to then ultimately make our team get better? And it's a big picture approach, but I think that's the exciting part of why I love the position I'm in is we got great people. I love our guys, and we're ready to roll up our sleeves and hopefully push this thing forward.
And I've said many times, this goes back to when Coach Craig was here, I've always been impressed by how deep Hobart goes, and not just at garbage time, but, you know, defensive line. You play a three-man front, there's about eight guys rotating in through there. So when someone does leave, the person behind them, very rarely is somebody just completely green. Whoever steps up, you go, oh, yeah, okay, I know this guy. I know what he can do.
It's really the next man up mentality, and we've had to overcome some injuries, as every college football team will have to do, and some are more severe than others, but I do agree with you there. I think we play more than most, and I think it's we don't always care about what the final score is. It's the ability to develop our young men, and you can develop them in a lot of different ways, and I think game experience is a very valuable way of doing that. So we do bring back a good chunk of experience. We had a couple JV games. We won those JV games, so guys gained some experience there. You started to see, and I met with Coach Gray, our strength coach. He's the director of our sports performance, who does a phenomenal job with our guys. And we've gone through and talked with individually each guy, like what did they do well, what do we need to work on. And I'm just excited because I think, you know, with how the last year and a half and changes and COVID and everything kind of, you know, we kind of emerged from there, I think, with a really good momentum. And again, we lost two close games this year that against two quality teams. But I think I thought it was a really successful year overall. And I think everybody that I've talked to so far is I'm going to be, you know, continuing to have individual meetings with players and the staff as we really forge this thing forward. I think guys are even hungrier than before about what we can do and what we can accomplish together without losing big picture of being great students, being great men here on campus. I think it's all in summation together. So it's an exciting time, and you know, we're having some great conversations with the recruits and their families, and I think a lot of people see the value in a Hobart education and a Hobart football experience. So so I think that those conversations are going really well as we look to add to our family, and it's just overall, it's just a really exciting time to be here.
As a coach, you must begin forming a sort of a picture in your head of what your next team is going to look like. How is Team 128 going to look different than Team 127 did this year?
I think that the moving parts are definitely the personnel. I look on defense in particular. Like, there's going to be some guys that that we're going to graduate. There's a ton of experience, ton of leadership that, you know, every guy has something else to bring to the table, but they're not going to be carbon copies of those guys. The staple is still going to be the same. We talked about it before. The mindset is to play aggressive, fast, and physical football. How do we do that? Do we adjust some schemes? Which guys step up at certain positions? But I would say on that side of the ball in particular, because that was, and we said that from our first podcast to where we are now, that was the group that had the most experience. That was the most senior-laden part of it. And I think there's going to be some opportunities. And we saw glimpses of some younger guys that really showed some really good things. But I think the winter workouts, the physically to develop some of these guys, and then into our spring training where we really get into back into the footwork, the technique. I'm excited to see who steps up over there. And I think on defense, it's a little bit easier to maybe to insert a young recruit. So if we find the right young guy that fits our schemes and whatnot. But I believe we're much deeper now on defense than we were my first year back. And part of that was why we adjusted some of the schemes and how teams were attacking us. But I think on that side of the ball, it's going to be exciting to see who steps up because, you know, you're losing some key, you know, all-conference, all-region, all-American type guys. And then I think on special teams, I thought we were too inconsistent early on in the season, in my opinion, to the standard of what Hobart special teams are typically like. Teams weren't kicking it deep because of our returners. We had a couple, you know, obviously Kyle Hackett gone and Rob and Toby doing a good job with the punting and kicking. Well, I think that position, that group, if we're going to take the next step and be a team that's truly contending for a national title, I think our special team play and our kicking game will have to improve. And the good news, I think we got a lot of those pieces back that now can improve on some things, and just little things from technique to schemes. We can the coaches will jump into that. And then I think on offense, which is interesting, is I would say we had two of the more dynamic offensive players in the country, let alone just in our conference. And both those guys have a lot of room to improve, and that's the exciting part. We're going to be built around offensive line, who's returning with some experience. That excites me as an O-line coach. I love the fact there, and I think we're talking to some really good young incoming guys. So I think the depth at that position is, when we were Elite Eight team contending to go down to the Final Four, it was, you look at the offensive line play, defensive line play, I think those two areas are going to be areas we need to continue to grow and develop at. And then I think the ability to have almost all of our offensive skill positions back. We're losing a couple guys, but the offense now is going to kind of flip to where the defense was this year, with there's going to be more experience maybe returning on that side of the ball. And as I've told everybody, that doesn't mean that they're automatically better next year. It just gives us another chance to maybe put the foot on the gas pedal and really see, can we take a next step with every one of those guys? And there's going to be competition, which I love competition. I think that's what drives really good programs, is that we're going to open up every position, have really honest and open communication as we go through and evaluate. But I think the competition at every single position, offense, defense, special teams, will be even more than what we were this year. And I think if guys are hungry and if they want to develop and they really take those conscious decisions to get better, I think that then pushes us as a team in the right direction.
How much does it mean to have a healthy Shaquille Matthews in the passing game? I mean, we saw what he did in the first game against Alfred, a couple of deep catches. I mean, I really thought he might be a 50-catch and 10-touchdown guy this year if he'd been fully healthy.
Yeah, you look at in our offense the last couple of years, so where Jake Catalano was, the Z position can get targeted. So, like, usually our outside receivers are some of the bigger play. They're working, the one-on-ones against corners or getting over the top. So those are, think of Ray Conley and some of those guys that played in that position, Brandon Shedd, the guys that we've coached that have been big-time deep threats. We're going to need some speed and some guys to step up at those outside positions. I think that was one of the things. James Mealy did it a little bit towards the tail end. But at times, you saw Marcus Lenz, Michael Battis, Rainius Daramola, and then inside you had Shaq and Alex Abella and Chris Bartosik kind of. What we do is we bring back a lot of guys, and we're going to figure out, they all have to get better. They have to get better at route running. They have to get better at understanding our schemes. They're going to get stronger. They're going to get faster. And a lot of it's also then rhythm with the quarterbacks, the chemistry there, and that comes with the protection. So, there's so many layers to that. But going back to what you said, I think Shaq has a significant upside. I think that, he brings, obviously some senior leadership now. But I also think from an explosiveness standpoint, I hope he can come back fresh, ready to go. And I think, I actually saw him last night. He was playing basketball, moving around pretty well as I was walking a recruit around our facilities. And it was just exciting to see him out there, being free and not having him worrying about his knee anymore. So I think he's made a full recovery. And we're going to rest some of the guys, and then we're going to just shake it up. And I hope he'll step up his game as well as all the other guys we just mentioned.
How does recruiting look these days? Is it still done largely in person? Is there more Zoom and stuff with COVID concerns? Has that changed recruiting much?
Yeah, I think the whole Zoom year and how COVID, it really affected the ability for us to get out and see recruits as well as for them to get to campus. So the virtual component, and again, we were always, we were FaceTiming recruits, so now all of a sudden it's just another way to put FaceTime there. I love looking a young man and his family eye to eye, and we're probably more honest than most in the recruiting process, saying this is who we are, this is who we're going to be, these are our standards. Are you excited to come in and join it? Are you really willing to uphold the Hobart way and the standards? And I love recruiting. I absolutely do, and I think that's what separates the coaches who can be successful at the college level. In our level, where we don't have scholarships, it's about relationships. It's not always easy, but I love working hard and being competitive in recruiting as well, and really finding the right people. Doesn't mean they have to be 4 stars or 5 stars or what their accolades are, but guys who fit into the way that we want to coach our guys, that want to develop, that want to be held to a certain standard. And I think what we try to do, so we've been able to finally now, everything's masked and we're doing everything the right way, but we're able to get out and see most schools are allowing us in. There's been showcases. There's been camps. There's been different ways to connect with them in person. And now we've been able to have, fortunately, our campus was open all the way during COVID. So we've had some that have been able to visit, but now the visits are really picking up even more. I think having that ability to have mom and dad or family members, whoever's important in their decisions to be on campus is key to have them here and get a feel and a sense of who we are and what we're all about. And we got a beautiful campus, great facilities, great academics, successful outcomes. There's so many things that are in Hobart's favor. And now it comes down to, because we recruit less than most, we bring in a smaller recruiting class, it's being super selective and finding the guys who are just excited to do it our way, the Hobart way, and are fully ready to commit into it. And then finding a combination of, some playmakers, some guys that are strong and different areas they can improve on. And I think that's where, I've already mentioned Coach Gray, I've mentioned our support staff, and I just think there's a lot of things going forward that we are a strong option for a lot of really good football players out there.
Is it harder to recruit at positions where you're deep? If you're looking for a running back, does a kid say, boy, I don't know, you got two of the best already? Or can you say to him, but if you look at our team, you can be the fourth or fifth running back, and you're still going to get into some games and still get some carries and still be able to show what you are?
I think it's a great question. I think some positions, maybe the quarterback position or where you only play one a little bit more, maybe that's a little bit harder. I think in the way we use the running back, I think it excites. If you're a competitive person, I think it should excite you. Because as you saw, I've been able to use those guys in slots and return. I just think we have a really talented recruit who at running back, and he was asking about, what is your role? I said, it's an open competition, and we need guys that are going to come in and continue to compete with Tim and Ray. And that goes for the conversations I'm going to have with the running backs on our roster. Like, complacency doesn't exist in our program. If it does, you're going to get passed by pretty quickly. And I think if you're a great player, so if you mentioned the Emmett Fords, the CJ Caleros, and there's a handful of guys, Tim and Ray are in that category. I've already had conversations with those guys, won't continue. Like, they can't rest where they are. And I think I know those guys well enough. They have clear, tangible ways to get better. So I think as I was having that conversation with that young recruit at the running back position, I think it excites them to see all the different ways that we can get the ball in their hands, and that most offenses don't use the running back. They want to chuck it around and throw it. They'd rather look pretty throwing it around. Like, we want to be balanced. We want to be able to run it when we want to run it and throw it when we want to throw it. But I just think teams that run the ball successfully, and that will be a staple of our offense, and that goes back to teams that were in the Elite Eight and fighting for national titles, those teams were great at the point of attack with our offensive line and set up the run game, and then we were really efficient in the passing game. And then there were some years where we had to pass it more than run in, but if you look at the success of those teams, they usually don't go quite as far and don't win those tough games when the weather's bad or when you face another physical team, you got to be able to have that. And I think when you run the ball, it becomes with a physical mindset that carries over. And our defense will always be good against the run because we go against one another. And I think it's iron sharpening iron. And so I think a recruit that, and that family, I think they got excited to see, man, look at what could happen. And you're right. We play anybody that can help us. So at every position, I don't want a defensive player to be worried about another defensive guy or a kicker to be worried about another kicker or quarterback. You can go through every single position. They're probably not Hobart guys if they don't want to come in and compete. I think more importantly, I think they like the standard that we hold our guys to, and the fact that we've been the winningest team in New York for two decades now. We're not going anywhere. If anything, we've pushed this thing forward, and we want to continue to raise the bar. We want guys who want to go play at a really high level and aren't afraid to go compete for it.
Well, and we saw that through the year. I mean, Andres Duran is one example offensively. I mean, he got some carries early. As the season developed, his role changed a little bit. You played him in some tight end / fullback looks. The defensive line rotation, I mean, there were guys that weren't part of that rotation the first two or three games that were right in there taking regular snaps at the end.
So here's an example against the Westminster game. There was the big hit. We had friendly fire where our two players, Emmett Ford and Brian Aguilar, hit one.
Yeah.
That was a crucial point.
Yeah.
And guess what? Anthony Romano, Jay McCoy, come on in. We rotate corner. We didn't skip a beat. And I think that goes to what you said earlier about if you have depth and you develop the depth, then all of a sudden you're not relying on just 11 guys on one side of the ball. And we've always been that way. And that's what we're going to try to do. We're going to try to make sure that right now our threes are going to compete with our twos. Our twos are going to compete with the ones. We don't really have a depth at this point. The next time we'll have a depth chart is when we finish preseason camp. So You pitch anyone that's returning. Tim and Ray, Shekyle, anyone that we've talked about that's returning, they haven't earned a spot yet. We go back to ground zero. We don't lose faith and trust in what they've accomplished, but we go back and we reinvent ourselves every single year. That's what that Team 128, it's a work in progress, and we won't know what that outcome is going to be until next fall. But I can tell you this, anyone that's a part of our program, they will not get complacent, and they take pride in getting better, and we're going to find different ways. And there's so many different ways. That's the fun part of our game, and why I love developing these young men is that whether that's academically, whether that's in our community engagement, whether that's in the strength and conditioning, whether that's in learning the schemes, technique, there's so many ways to improve that we're going to focus on that every single day. And the guys who do that, and I think of the Ali Marpets and the great players, they continue to get better even when they were great players. And then what I think we find is that there's some guys who maybe didn't play as much this year. They're younger guys that were finding their way or, you know, moving their body between strength conditioning and diet and nutrition, understanding like what it takes to play at an elite college football level. So there's so many variables that go into it that each guy has a different path in terms of where they need to improve. And that's what we're going to have is really open communication and try to help them as best as we can in the ways that we can and our support systems around there to help us get to that point.
One last thing. Let's talk about the Hobart football family. I'm always on the Facebook group, these parents that support the program, and some of the biggest fans of the program are parents of kids that really aren't getting on the field that much yet. I mean, there's seems to be that buy-in all the way around that, like you say, next man up. You know, you might not be playing a lot now, but next week or next year, you will be.
You know, the family is the reason I chose Hobart. Family is the reason I've stayed at Hobart and why I believe in this place. There's really good people, and I think in the Hobart football family, we try to do everything we can to bring in great people. Fundamentally, that's one of our basic principles, and it sounds easy, but when you bring in really good people and then are really hopefully have clear communication on what we're trying to do, we're not perfect, and I say we, that's you know, players don't mean to make mistakes, coaches don't mean to make mistakes. You know, and we put a lot of trust in the families that they are a part of that decision-making process. So when a family comes in, they understand that the standards are here, that we're going to hold their sons and their young men to really, really high standards. But more importantly, we're going to love them, we're going to coach them hard, and we're going to treat them like they're our own children. And I think, you know, there's going to be bumps and bruises along the way. There's some losses, and there's some things that, you know, I'm sure there's some families that don't always agree with playing time. But if they understand the work and time that we put in, the conscious decision-making, we're trying to do what's best for the program, what's best for their sons. And I think of there's a couple guys, I won't bring up their names, that, you know, along the way that there was either discipline problems and, you know, no one holds our guys to higher standards than myself on this team and on this campus, and how they've grown and matured through those. There was guys who maybe weren't with their team that then had to come back and earn that opportunity. I think of young guys who were maybe young, immature, and they were the big guy coming out of high school that had to like get knocked down a couple pegs. And they're the ones who honestly are usually when they're walking across that stage with a diploma or when they get that first job, or they're the ones inviting us to the weddings, like they'll come back and say, thanks, coach. I appreciate you being hard on us. And that's when I say the Hobart way. And I had a recruit ask, like, what does that mean? And it's a standard and a level of expectation to take pride in doing things to the best of your ability. How you do anything is how you do everything. And I just believe that there's the process-driven approach that we do in our program. And I think the parents look at it, and again, we're not perfect. I never once have said that, but I think they know that we have really, really strong intentions and try to take care of these guys like they are our sons. And when you talk about that as a family, that's through thick and thin. That's when there's losses in your family, there's hardships. It's not just when you're winning bowl games. And I think that piece of the puzzle, that consistency piece, is one of the reasons I love being here. I love the young men and the families that have committed to us, and we're all in on them. And that doesn't waver. Whether someone's an All-American, whether someone's a young player that hasn't played, our commitment level, and you'll see, like, I'm coaching those guys as hard as I'm coaching Emmett Ford or Tim and Rayshon, any of those guys. We coach everybody fairly. We coach them hard. And more importantly, off the field, we love them hard. And I think that part is genuine. And I think families see that. And that's one of the reasons when you talk about a family, you have each other's back through thick and thins. And we went through a tough year when you think of the COVID and not having a season. And there was hardship for guys not being able to play a season and whatnot. But you know what? I think it's a good moral for, you know, life lessons of real life. You're going to get knocked down. You're going to go through some hardship. And I think our guys, we always talk about how you respond to certain situations. And I think that's where it goes back to the family. If you trust one another, you can see eye to eye and even, you know, have conversations to say, all right, I understand where you're coming from, and move forward. So that's the exciting part. And I think, you know, I appreciate the support of the families, you know, because again, sometimes they don't realize, like, we're making decisions that are best for the team. And I know I got two beautiful little girls that I'm sure I'm going to be that parent that's going to be working hard and want the best for them. And I got a little boy that's going to be born here in a couple of weeks. So believe me, I see it from a lens of a parent as well. But we're trying to make decisions that are best for each individual as well as the team. And I think the families that truly get it understand that. And I think more importantly, when they leave after their four-year Hobart experience, or if they stay in the Masters of Management, like the family, that process-driven approach, our goal is to make them so they're a better version of themselves every single day. And typically that happens. They're going to be in better positions to be that future CEO, that lawyer, that doctor, whatever they want to be. But more importantly, they're going to be better fathers, better husbands. And I think that is why I believe in the Hobart way and really the outcomes of our guys. We're competitive on the field to make sure that process-driven approach gives us a good product in terms of the football team. But it's so much bigger than that. And I think those that are part of the family see it. And again, we appreciate the support. And we're going to reinvest in them, and that's something that we take a lot of pride in.
Well, Coach, thanks for doing these conversations. The fans have said that they really feel like they get an up-close look at the program through these. We appreciate that, and we love the fans and their support of the broadcast, and look forward to doing this again in September.
We really appreciate your support. You do a great job, not just covering football, but all of the teams here, and goes back to when I was a player, and I think, you know, obviously thanks to you and the college for their support, but also for all those families that we want to be as open as we can. And I think you brought a really good lens into, you know, the game preparation and you see it day to day. So we do appreciate all your support.
All right. This has been the Hobart Football Podcast. Until next September, have a great football off season.